There was a time when economic freedom fighters, Commander-in-Chief Julius Malema and his party seemed unstoppable. But the future of both are in the balance. Now, we speak to Chris Oxtoby of For Freedom Under Law. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Following Mr. Malema's conviction, criminal conviction for firearm offences and that hate speech ruling against him, how do you see his political future changing?
So it will be a bit of a case of wait and see, certainly as far as the criminal conviction is concerned. Of course, there's a provision of the Constitution which people remember back to last year when former President Zuma was disqualified from standing for parliament because of this provision, which means essentially that if you are convicted of an offence with a sentence above a certain threshold, I think it's 12 months without imposition of a fine from memory, then you are disqualified from being a member of the National Assembly. So were the sentence to reach that level, obviously he wouldn't be able to sit as a member of parliament. That is something that we will simply have to wait and see. The sentencing has been postponed until January of next year. Whether it has an impact, if he's not in fact convicted to that level of severity, I think it remains to be seen. I mean, I think we've seen a long history in this country of people have been able to take legal troubles, shall we say, and use them as a vehicle for politics of grievance or of martyrdom. And it may be that it has this kind of effect. It may perhaps be that other issues such as the MK party eating into EFF membership, the Floyd Shivambu party, it may be that those have a more significant impact in the long run. But I think, I mean, to turn to the issue that Freedom Under Law and other civil society organizations have particularly had a difficulty with following this conviction, and as you say, also the preceding hate speech finding against him, relates to his membership of the Judicial Service Commission. Now, this is something which Mr. Malema has been Mr. Malema has been a member of the JSC for over 10 years. And it's something that he's, I think, used very skillfully as a way of building profile, as a way of being noticed, and a way of sort of coming across, I think, in different ways to different people. In some ways, he's able to showcase his firebrand nature on that commission. In some ways, he's I think, been quite impressive to audiences, seeing how he can actually be a very skillful questioner and has asked some very skillful and effective questions. Of course, on the other hand, he's also asked some questions that have been extremely problematic. If anyone remembers a round of Constitutional Court interviews in 2021, which actually had to be rerun after they were legally challenged. And some of the questions that he'd asked in that round of interviews had been central to that issue. So I think his role on the JSC has been quite significant. I think the interviews of prospective judges that the JSC conducts attract quite a lot of attention. They're live streamed. I think people are increasingly aware that that is an important and significant issue, and he's been a very prominent voice on that. Now, the difficulty that these legal issues raise is that, well, let's say that there's two aspects. The first is that he and the EFF have indicated that they do intend to appeal both decisions. That obviously raises a potential conflict of interest if he's going to be sitting on the body that is constitutionally responsible for selecting judges. If he is then sitting on the interviews and the selection process over those, over judges who may even possibly end up hearing cases that relate to those legal challenges he has, that obviously raises a serious conflict of interest question. There's then the question of his very suitability to be on the body at all. And in that regard, we have to remember there was a judgment by the Western Cape High Court last year concerning former Judge Chlope and his attempt or his possible membership of the JSC, which the court set aside. and saying that, amongst other things, the Constitution implicitly has a fit and proper requirement to be a member of the JSE. Now, in that case, former Judge Philpe's removal as a judge and the circumstances around that, his subsequent statements about the judiciary, about that process, were all considered factors that made him a not fit and proper person to sit on the JSE. The significance of that here is that, in addition to the very fact of the hate speech finding, the criminal conviction, and of course also to recall, a few years before that, there was a finding by Parliament's Ethics Committee that Mr. Malema abused his position on the JSE for personal gain. The High Court upheld that finding. So you have all of those legal woes. You then also have remarks that were made in the immediate aftermath of the criminal conviction, with the EFF statement associated elements of the judiciary with a broader racist conspiracy. And there was, I think, a quite clear insinuation that there was racism on the part of the magistrate. Those are comments that ourselves and other civil society organizations just regard as completely unfounded. They're presented without evidence, without substantiation. They're completely inappropriate for someone in that position to make about the judiciary, if they're then going to be sitting on the body, as I say, that plays a central role in appointing judges. So both of those factors, the conduct as evidenced in the court cases and the recent statements, as well as the conflict of interest aspects, we say all of that makes his position on the JSE untenable. Now, of course, I mean, to go back to your original question, I don't think that's a fatal problem for their political prospects. But I think it does do some harm, as I say, not least because it has been quite a high profile forum for him to showcase himself.
Now, does the National Assembly have enough grounds to act against him now, or would they have to wait for his appeals to be heard?
I think, on the basis of the Klopé judgment, which makes it clear that the National Assembly does have to consider whether or not someone that it designates to the JSE is fit and proper for that role, that position has been clearly established by the courts. Even if the appeal were to succeed, and even if the argument were to be made that, well, the appeal is pending and we have to wait for that process, I think the fact of those comments that were made about the magistrate and about the judiciary in the aftermath of the conviction, plus, as I say, the earlier conflict of interest finding, and that I'm not aware that is being challenged. I mean, that's a finding by Parliament that stands and that has been confirmed in the courts. We would say that those, even if you completely disregard the fact of the court findings that are under appeal, that those would give Parliament enough grounds to act. And under the Constitution, someone's membership of the JSE, when they've been designated by an organization, lasts until that organization revokes that designation. So Parliament, we think, certainly would have the power to do that. And I think it really is, it is important for the credibility of the process of appointing judges. That is something that needs to be protected. It impacts on the public trust and confidence in the judiciary in general, that process has to be trusted, has to be seen to be above suspicion. I think it really is important that issue is taken seriously and is given serious consideration.
What are the chances, as it stands now, that will happen?
Well, I think in the statement that ourselves and other civil society organizations released, we did call on Mr. Malema to step down. Now, viewers can make their own judgment about how likely that is to happen. But I think, look, it's easy to be skeptical and say that, well, you know, one can find so many examples of Parliament, inaction by Parliament on all kinds of issues, it'd be easy to be cynical about that. But on the other hand, and particularly post the Klopé judgment, where the courts have, you know, very clearly laid down to Parliament that the question of membership of the Judicial Service Commission, the sort of how Parliament considers and applies itself to who it sends to the JSC, is something that has to be taken seriously and that has standards that have to be applied to it. So let me just say that the Parliament really should, in light of that judgment particularly, give very serious consideration to the point.
Now, Mr. Malema was not at the JSC hearings this week. He was at Parliament's ad hoc committee. You were there. You spent 2 days there.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it was an interesting question because, of course, the criminal conviction and the statements that I referred to had taken place only a few days before the JSC's sitting, which started this week, took place. So, of course, it was a point of great interest to see would he be there? How would he respond? Only, of course, that it turned out that he was attending the ad hoc committee instead. I confess that I haven't been following the proceedings in the ad hoc committee closely because of watching the JSC. So I don't want to speak too much or speculate about what was going on in those proceedings. But it was nevertheless interesting to see that choice being made. What I think is important from that is that we shouldn't get lulled into thinking that the fact of his absence from this week's proceedings so far means that the issue is not a live one. If these decisions in question are going to be appealed, appeal processes could conceivably last for years to come. The firearms charge, for example, that's a conviction in the magistrate's court. So one would be looking at an appeal to the High Court. If that's unsuccessful, we could be looking at an appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal. One could then be looking at an appeal to the Constitutional Court. These are all courts that are, dealing with extremely heavy caseloads, and these processes take notoriously long. So the fact that he wasn't at the JSC now does not mean that we're not going to have to face and grapple with this issue in the future. It's given everyone a little bit of a stay of sorts, a pause. It's not been squarely put in issue as to whether or not he was actually at the JSC. So I suppose you could be said, well, it buys a bit of time. But I do think it's important that to bear in mind that it doesn't take away any of these underlying issues that we've been speaking about. Those are all going to continue to remain live. The JSC is likely to sit again in April next year. And it's highly unlikely that the full range of court processes and appeal processes would have been concluded by then. So we're very much going to have to come back to and revisit this issue in the future.
Now, what can you share with us from the hearings you attended this week?
So I think there are two particularly interesting points from what we've seen so far. We had interviews on Tuesday for the Constitutional Court. We had interviews yesterday for the Supreme Court of Appeal. So these are the country's two highest courts. The Constitutional Court in particular has been having a long-standing problem where they've not been able to get enough candidates to fill vacancies. The two vacancies that were interviewed for on Tuesday have been standing open since 2021. So there's really been a crisis of sorts in terms of filling vacancies, getting enough candidates to stand for these positions. So the good news is that the JSC was able to interview enough candidates and was able to put enough candidates forward for possible appointment. And so just to explain that for the Constitutional Court, unlike other courts, the JSC sends a list of potential candidates to the president. The president then chooses who to appoint based off that list. So that means that this question of numbers is a particularly important one. So we've got enough candidates. A list has been prepared. That's good news. There's some strong candidates on that list. The concerning part was that the one candidate who was not listed, one candidate who was left off that list that goes to the president, was someone coming from a different background, from a part practitioner, part academic background, And there were certainly concerns raised before the interview about several aspects of her candidacy, both in terms of her legal experience. And there was also a question that she was under debt review, which the general counsel of the bar raised as a concern. And questions were asked before the interviews about, well, how was she in fact shortlisted in the first place, given these issues? And unfortunately, you know, the interview itself simply bore out that it was a very, very strange decision as to why she should have made the shortlist. It was particularly strange because someone on the JSC must have advanced an argument to put her there, but nobody in the interview seemed to be coming to her aid and asking questions to show her in a better light. So this really, in terms of sort of underlying structural questions, raises some concerns about how the JSC is doing its shortlisting process. It's not clear who exactly makes that decision and what criteria they employ, and there's not the same level of transparency about that process as there is with other aspects of the process of appointing judges. So I think this round has really highlighted the issue that is something that needs to be given serious attention. Then we saw yesterday the Supreme Court of Appeal, we only had one vacancy. There were a number of candidates. I forget the exact number now, 5 or 6 candidates, I think. And some credible candidates there. I would say 3 candidates particularly had good interviews where the commissioners seemed to be impressed. I was certainly expecting that an appointment would be made. In the end, it turned out that none of the candidates were able to get enough votes. None of them commanded the majority required to be appointed. So we have to go and do the whole process again the next time the JSC sits. And there is, just to put this in a slightly wider context, and Freedom Under Law has ongoing litigation with the JSC over the JSC's voting process. This was prompted by a controversial round of interviews 2 years ago. The litigation is still ongoing. This issue just highlights again that there do seem to be some issues with the voting and the decision-making process. As I say, I really would have expected that the round of interviews would have delivered the JSC a candidate that they could have appointed. And the fact that they weren't able to does again raise further questions about whether the process that we don't see after the interviews, the deliberations and the voting behind closed doors, whether that is properly fit for purpose if it's not being able to deliver us candidates. And, you know, just to, not that this should be the be-all and end-all, but just on a practical level, the cost and the organizational and administrative process of going through this process again in 6 months' time is not ideal. If we don't have enough good candidates, then fine. No one should be appointed to be a judge just for the sake of filling a vacancy. But I do think in this case, there were enough good candidates to have made that appointment. It's unfortunate the JSC couldn't do so. And so I think that their voting processes do continue to be something that need to be under scrutiny.
Thank you. That was Chris Oxtoby, Awful Freedom Under Law. Speaking to BizNews, I'm Christine.